11. Bella floated in the gymnasium, weightless now that the ship was at rest. The assembled throng represented almost the entire crew. She could feel the unspoken force of their demand for action. There was only one thing they wanted of her, and that was not in her power to give. "We've turned the ship," she said, making dutiful eye contact with her senior staff. "I have it on good authority that the engine is ready to push us away from Janus." She waited a bit. "But we won't be moving." It took a while for the impact of her words to sink in. She watched as an almost palpable wave of affront passed through her crew, even those who would normally have supported any decision she took. "The risk is too great," Bella said, before anyone had a chance to shout her down. "Our fuel situation is too precarious, even if we can trust the readings. If we can't, and I have good reason to doubt them, then the situation is beyond hopeless. With empty tanks, we'll freeze to death within 3 or 4 weeks, long before any rescue mission could reach us. The best-case scenario allows us to limp home and just make it, but I can't allow myself to be tempted by false hopes. Your lives are too precious for that." Svetlana was the first to speak.
"Bella, we have to move now."
Bella nodded understandingly.
"But you said it yourself, Sveta. There's no guarantee that the engine will get us out of here." "What was the expression you used?" "You said it was a combustion regime you've never explored before." "Sorry, but I'm just not prepared to put lives on the line like that."
"You only listen to me when it suits you,"
Svetlana said, hostile now.
"No," Bella said. "I've listened to every word you've ever said, every time, and I'm listening now. The risk of what you're suggesting is just too great."
"Then we'll die out here."
"No, we won't. At least not for a long, long time. And that's my point, Sveta."
There were more than 130 people in the room, but those who disagreed with Bella appeared to be willing to let Svetlana speak for them. Bella had no idea whether they amounted to a majority, but their silence cut through her like an invisible wind.
"We can't survive," Svetlana said.
"We'll survive longer here than we would waiting for rescue on the edge of the system. Here we have fusion power. When that runs out, we have Janus. There's an entire world only a few thousand kilometers away. It's carrying us into interstellar space."
Svetlana sounded plaintive. There was an edge of hysteria in her voice.
"Bella, listen to me. Every second we're not running."
"We're not running," said someone else. "We don't ever run."
Collectively, the room tracked the voice. Jim Chisholm had dressed, but his painful thinness was emphasized by every hollow crease and sharp curve of his clothes. Bella wondered how he had made it down to the weightless volume of the gymnasium. She assumed that Ryan, or perhaps Jagdeep Singh, had carried him. Chisholm coughed and found some strength. His voice had a conviction Bella had not heard in months.
"Bella's right. Running would kill us. I know this is hard. I know this is tough medicine. But what she's saying is true. Our only hope is with Janus. We should stay here and find a way to keep alive."
Someone else started to speak now, not Svetlana, but Chisholm raised his voice again.
"Listen to me. I want to go home. I want to go home so badly it makes me weep. Most of you know that there's something in my head that's killing me. Something that even Ryan can't cure, although he's done his damnedest. He's tried everything in his power."
He looked at Axford, stationed by the doorway, and Bella saw the doctor acknowledge this public thanks with a small grave nod, as if, like an executioner, he took no pleasure in having done his best. Chisholm turned back to his audience.
"When we were offered a shot at Janus, I took it gladly. It was my best hope of getting home before there was nothing of me left to cure. Things didn't work out the way I hoped, but if I were offered that chance again, I'd still take it. If only to see the things we've seen, the things we will see in the weeks ahead if we do the brave thing. Better to be here, now, than anywhere else in the universe. No one has ever been more privileged than us."
He paused for a moment and looked astonished.
"And some of you think we should run? With no guarantee of even making it back to the local stellar rest frame?"
Chisholm shook his head wonderingly.
"It can't be true. Not aboard Rockhopper. We're miners. We push ice. They sent us out here to do a job, to mine Janus, only this time for knowledge. It's still mining. It's still what we do. I say we stay. I say we stay here and finish the job.
It was a good speech, and it came from a member of the crew who was universally liked and respected. Bella dared to hope it might be enough to win the day. For some, perhaps, it was. But not for everyone.
I didn't come here to die, said Christine Ofria,
looking around for support.
I came here to do a difficult job, yes. I wanted to look at Janus, but I have a life back home. I want to see it again.
A chorus of voices added weight to her statement. Bella tried to judge numbers, who was with her, who was against. It was going to be a close call.
No one's saying you won't see home again, Bella said, raising her voice above the tide of dissent. What I'm saying is that if that's what you want, to get home, then Janus is your best, your only hope.
She's right, said Jim Chisholm again, his voice carving its own silence into the room. Janus is taking us away from home. Bella and I know that, but it's also a means to stay alive. If we can keep ourselves alive, anything is possible.
We may never find a way to slow Janus, Bella said, but I'm damned if we won't try. And if that doesn't work, we'll still have options. If all we can do is stop Janus accelerating, that will still give us a chance of being rescued. Now that we've sent images home, the UEE will have a huge incentive to come and take a longer, more detailed look. They'll want to send out another ship, something fast enough to catch up with us.
She swallowed a frog in her throat.
Even if we can't make Janus slow down, we don't know that it will keep accelerating. There's still hope, and at the end of it all, we'll still be alive.
Some of you probably want to take your chances on the return voyage, Chisholm said. I understand. Really, I do. But it won't work. Luck would have to be on our side all the way home.
He looked confidingly at his audience.
Take it from me. Luck isn't on our side. And if we start counting on luck, we're finished. We're professionals. Luck doesn't come into the equation. Hard planning, guts, and resourcefulness do.
We don't have to make it all the way home, said Malcolm Fox, one of the mass driver specialists. We just have to slow down. We can last in empty space at least long enough until we're rescued.
We can last 3 or 4 weeks with no fuel in the tanks, Bella said. No longer, unless you think metal burns.
Even if we had 6 weeks, Chisholm said, that still wouldn't be enough time. The company wouldn't spare a rescue mission to take me home even when we were in comfortable shuttle range. They offered to freeze me. If we turn from Janus now, then we'll already have played our trump cards. We'll have nothing they really need from us, except the dollar value of this ship, and that can wait until someone sends out a recovery tug.
He paused, gathering his strength. No one interrupted him.
But Janus gives us leverage. Right now we own it, not Deep Shaft, not the UEE. If they want a slice of it, they'll have to come out and negotiate with us. When they do, we'll be ready and waiting.
Gregor Mayer, one of Parry's mining team, broke the silence that followed. I'm not going to make any friends here, said the sandy-haired Scotsman, but I think Bella and Jim are right. Our best hope is to stay. That doesn't mean I have to like it. I think it's the lesser of two evils.
I agree, said Saul Regis, tapping a finger against the braided strand of his beard. We stay, we live.
I'm with Bella, said Rader Kirschner, one of the cometary scientists under Nick Thale. We're not finished with Janus. We didn't come all this way just to turn around.
Bella was glad of the support, but she knew that those people who had publicly thrown in their lot with her had no strong ties to Earth, or to any of the space colonies. None of them were married. They had left neither lovers nor close family behind. Unfortunately, that could not be said for everyone on the ship. No sooner had she framed that thought than Craig Schrope pushed himself away from his tether point at the wall and drifted into the middle of the auditorium. With expert timing, he brought himself to a halt 3 meters to Bella's right, close enough to command attention, but not so close that he looked like he was standing with her.
This space vehicle is a Deep Shaft commercial asset, he said. We have an obligation to bring it back home.
Bella and Jim can talk about professional duty all they like. We're miners, yes, but we're also custodians of this ship. He looked pityingly at Chisholm, the way he might have looked at roadkill. I'm sorry, Jim, but you have no authority here anymore.
Craig, Bella said warningly, don't try to split the ship. It doesn't have to happen this way.
I'm not splitting anything, Shrope said. I'm not the one talking about being abandoned by Deep Shaft. I'm not the one talking as if the company has already forsaken us.
And don't try playing the company loyalty card either, Bella said. This is about human lives.
It is, Shrope said, nodding emphatically, and I don't happen to think this is any place to spend the rest of my life.
An idea seemed to occur to him suddenly. A gloss of interested animation suffused his face. He looked at Svetlana.
I will freely admit that you and I have had our differences in the last few days.
What about it, Craig? Svetlana asked, with exaggerated civility.
You never wanted this, Shrope told her. Rightly or wrongly, you didn't buy into this. You were always ambivalent about Janus, and after the accident you had grave reservations about continuing the mission. He waved a hand dismissively. It's true that we had a difference of opinion about the validity of your fears, I admit that. But if you'd had your way, we'd have never ended up in this mess.
Fuck you, Craig. You didn't listen. That's all that matters to me.
She was still furious with him. But I'm listening now, he said. I'm listening and I'm asking you to work with me, for the sake of Rockhopper, if not Deep Shaft.
She looked appalled. Work with you?
Bella can't operate this ship without you. You hold the reins, Svetlana. You are the one who gets to choose whether we stay here or make a run for home. It's in your hands.
Don't listen to him, Bella said. We've been over this. It's suicide even to think of returning.
It won't be a question of taking the ship, Shrope said, talking to everyone in the room. Bella has already abdicated authority here by giving up on us. That leaves me. I'm still in command. All anyone here has to do is keep doing their job.
If you listen to Craig, you will all die, Bella said.
Shrope fixed his attention on Svetlana, as if Bella had not spoken. I need you to get us home, he said. I need you to pull your team together and start the engine. We'll rig for 2 G's. It's all or nothing, Svieta. The engine will either get us home, or we'll go out in a blaze of glory. Both of those options are better than rotting out here.
Don't do this, Bella said.
But her voice died somewhere in her throat, reaching no one.
They were no longer listening to her, or to any of the other senior staff. The gathering had erupted into heated debate, a ruction that at any instant threatened to boil over into violence.
I've lost the ship, she said, for the benefit of no one but herself. Yet Jim Chisholm whispered, they'll come back to you. They always come back. Deep down they know you're right.
A voice boomed from the crowd, temporarily silencing them all. It was Saul Regis, his big form trembling with adrenaline.
Fine, he said. If it comes to this, so be it. But let's see how we all stand. Let's draw a line in the sand. Those with Bella gather around me. Those who agree with Craig gather around him.
Bella watched her crew split into those two groupings, still a little stunned that it had actually come to this. At first it looked as if Shrope was going to win the day by a clear margin, but Bella had more loyalists than she realized. Saul Regis, supporting Bella, gathered most of his robotics team around him, with only Marcia Batista defecting to Shrope's party. Half of the science team came to Bella, and more than half of the medical team, and a handful of Svetlana's flight systems party, mostly the younger, less experienced members, like Meredith Bagley and Mencheng Young. Bella counted heads. Including Saul Regis and herself, she had around 40 people. There were a lot fewer than 40 people gathered around Craig Shrope. The rest of the crew formed an amorphous, jostling group between the two rival leaders. Most of Parry's mining team, as well as Parry himself, had yet to decide. Svetlana had not declared her allegiance either. It couldn't have been easy for Svetlana, Bella thought. No matter how much she might have agreed with him, the idea of joining forces with Craig Shrope must have really stuck in her craw. Bella caught her eye. Svetlana mouthed back something that might have been defiance. but might equally well have been an apology. As if their friendship still counted. She moved to Craig Schrope's side. A moment later, Bella observed Parry Boyce follow her. She could not blame Parry for that. Where Parry followed, so did most of his EVA team. Gregor Mayer was the only miner who stayed loyal to Bella. So now it was done. There were no stragglers, no undecided votes, and there was no need to count the numbers. Svetlana's decision had been crucial. Craig Schrope could now count on more than half of the crew. His angry clique was visibly larger than Bella's motley assembly. The difference was fewer than 20 people, but the addition of the EVA party gave Schrope's group the cohesion of an army. With their expertise in ship systems, they had a clear technical edge over Bella's assortment of scientists, roboticists, and medical staff. Miraculously, a kind of calm fell upon the divided gathering. Schrope's party knew they had effective control of the ship. Bella's group knew there was nothing they could do about it. It had been a bloodless mutiny. Her crew, even as it ripped itself apart, had not disgraced itself. Bella allowed herself a tiny, waning flicker of pride. They had behaved like adults, even as they spurned her. "I have the ship," Schrope said. He sounded relieved, more than triumphant. "We'll do as I said. Prep for 2 Gs. Immediate burn as soon as we're ready. We'll drop the mass drivers." He looked at Svetlana. "Can you organize your team and get on this right away?" Svetlana took a deep breath, crossing some mental Rubicon, and nodded. "It's doable." Bella raised her hands. She had their instant, total attention. "All right. You've done what you think is right. I can't blame any of you for that. You want to survive very badly. Believe it or not, so do I. To those of you who have joined Craig because you think that's the best way to keep serving the company, and that to follow me would be the disloyal act, well, I understand. I don't blame you for it. But you're still doing the wrong thing." "You've said enough, Bella." Schrope cut her off. "Now let me say my piece." "Be my guest," she said. "Bella is wrong about this," he said, addressing the crowd again. "Yes, we could eke out a living around Janus, maybe, but don't mistake optimism for certainty. We know we can slow down. That's not in dispute. That's physics." "Is this leading somewhere, Craig, or do you just want to rub my nose in it?" Bella asked. He fixed her with a tolerant smile. "You've said that you understand my people. Well, I understand yours. I'm extending the hand of reconciliation to all of you. Saul, Ryan, Jim. It isn't too late to throw your weight in with us." He spread his arms magnanimously, as if welcoming them to the party. "We're committed to the slowdown now. The ship is ours. But we can still behave like civilized human beings. Join us. Accept that this course of action is going to take place and we can all be friends." "Just like that?" Nick Thale asked. "You're saying we just join you and it's let bygones be bygones?" "I don't see why not." "I do," Thale said. "You've stolen this ship from Bella Lind, the captain. I wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire." A line of tension creased Schrope's neck like a hawser. I have secured this ship, that's all." "Why don't you go play in an airlock, Craig?" Thale snapped back. "It's all right," Bella said. "I appreciate the support, Nick, I truly do. But let's keep this civil. Before very long, we may all need each other again. I'd rather not stoop to personality attacks." She turned from Thale and spoke up again. "So, Craig, how do you want to play this? There are about 40 of us against about 100 of you. One of my people is terminally ill. It's obvious that we lack the numbers to retake the ship, but rest assured that my people will obstruct and impede your every move. We'll do all in our power to keep this ship from falling out of the slipstream." "I can't have that," Schrope said. "I didn't think you would. That means we have to discuss terms and conditions." "There isn't time for this," Svetlana said. "If we're going to do this, we have to start now." "Take whoever you need," Schrope told her. "Just make sure you give us 5 minutes warning before you light the engine." Svetlana took Robert Unglis and Naohiro Uguru with her. She needed only 2 trusted members of her team. Together, they would have no difficulty in bringing the engine back up to power. No one made any effort to stop them leaving. It was obvious that Schrope's party had a massive advantage, not just in numbers, but in strength, too. Parry's EVA miners were steroid-muscled and tough as nails, and they probably counted for double their actual number. Once Svetlana and her engineers had left, Schrope stroked his jaw and studied Bella with curatorial interest, as if wondering where in his scrapbook to pin her. "You're right about Jim," he mused. "The best place for him is the medical center. You have Ryan, Jagdeep, and Judy, in any case." "I'm still the flight surgeon on this ship," Axford said. "You'll need my services if one of you slips and breaks something. That's why I'm proposing that you occupy the part of the ship clustered around the medical center. It'll be a squeeze, but I'm sure you'll manage. Like Bella said, we can't very well have you running around." "And you?" Bella asked. "We'll need access to the critical flight systems, of course. Navigation and propulsion, life support. That means pretty much the rest of Rockhopper. But don't worry, we'll look after you." "You know," Bella said, "the more I think about it, the more I like Nick's suggestion about the airlock." "I thought you wanted to keep this civil," Schrope said. 5 minutes later, Svetlana sent word that she was ready to start the engine. Schrope told her to start the burn at a quarter G, and then to smoothly increase to half a G over the ensuing 5 minutes. That would give everyone time to reach their berths for confinement during the immobilizing lockdown of the 2G burn. Then Svetlana could turn the engine up as far as she dared. Janus would fall away. In 30 or 40 minutes the ship would drop out of the slipstream, and Janus itself would look as if it was suddenly speeding away from them as its true acceleration became apparent. By that time, Bella knew, they would already be lost. Craig Schrope's intimate knowledge of Rockhopper's layout had served him well. The medical center and its surrounding cluster of rooms formed a near-perfect prison, isolated from any ship-critical systems. With only two airlocked passageways accessing the entire area, it was an easy matter to seal one lock and station an informal sentry point at the other. Bella and her party were left to make their own provisions for comfort. Under 2Gs, walking would be nearly impossible, and even sitting would be unpleasant. While the ship was still at half a G, Bella and Axford raided the medical center for support cushions and pillows, and distributed these around. Jim Chisholm was helped back into bed, completely drained by the events in the gymnasium. "I wish I could think of something we could do," he said, as Axford slipped nutrient lines back into his permanent cannulas. "But Craig has us right where he wants us." "Just rest," Axford told him gently. Belinda Pagus held up the limp form of a flexi. "We're locked out of anything useful. I've tried all the obvious tricks to get around the barriers, but they look pretty watertight." "Let me try," Bella said. But the result was the same. The flexi would only allow her access to the most superficial layers of shipnet. "This is what I did to Svetlana," she said. "I'll keep trying to find a hole," Pagus said. "My guess is that Svetlana didn't set up these barriers. She'd have been too busy with the engine. More than likely it was Bob Unglis." "Unglis is good," Bella said. "I'm better." "It won't make much difference even if you do find a hole," Carsten Flieg said. "Even if you had unrestricted access, you'd only be able to stop the engine once. Then they'd come and take the flexies away from us." Flieg's calm pedantry often irritated Bella, but as usual, he was absolutely correct. At best, they could impede the escape effort, not block it forever. "If we could just inflict some damage on the engine," she said, "enough to put it out of action, but not destroy the ship." "Or damage the tokamak itself," Pegasus reminded her. "If you win the day, we're still going to need that for power." "Whatever you might have in mind," Meng Cheng Yang said, "it might be best not to talk about it." "Yang's right," Bella said. "If Craig's on the ball, he'll be listening to every word we say, and watching us on the cams." "And monitoring our flex activity," Pegasus said. She gave Bella a pessimistic smile. "But I'll keep trying." The speaker came to life. "This is Schrope. Word is that Svetlana's ready to push to 2Gs. We'll increase smoothly through 1G, but I'd suggest you make yourselves comfortable. The ride may be a little rough until Svetlana fine-tunes the fusion parameters." Bella felt a tremor run through the ship as the engine pushed beyond half a G. It was more power than they had ever generated before,
operating well outside their textbook performance envelope. Bella felt her own weight increase. She tried to judge the moment when the acceleration passed through 1G. She sat on her haunches, pushing back against the padded side of a cabinet. Most of her people were in similar positions, dispersed through two rooms. She thought about destroying the engine, and realized with bleak resignation that it was already far too late for that. Rockhopper had gained enough speed to escape the weak gravitational field of Janus. Even if the engine cut out now, the ship would continue on its drift to the edge of the slipstream. She had lost. It was just a question of accepting it now. Her weight increased until even sitting was unpleasant. Slowly, Bella stretched out until she was lying flat, with only a pillow under her head for support. It was easier that way. Breathing still felt more difficult than normal, but at least now her weight was distributed more evenly across her whole body. Pegasus was still trying to crack the shipnet lockout. "I'm sorry," she said. "This is too difficult, and it doesn't look as if Unglis made any silly mistakes." She put the flexi down, groaning with overworked muscles. "No one's going to make any silly mistakes," Bella said. "We're too good a crew for that." Now and then the floor kicked up at them with renewed force as the thrust became momentarily unsteady, but the jolts gradually became less severe and less frequent as Svetlana adjusted the details of the fusion reaction. "Bella," Tom Crabtree said, his voice just loud enough to carry over the background noise, "there's something you should know." Bella smiled reassuringly at the taphead. "I'm glad you sided with me, Tom. It counts for a lot. You don't have to explain yourself." "I'm siding with the rightful authority on this ship," Crabtree said, his nervous, feral eyes still not meeting hers. "But that isn't what I wanted to talk to you about." "What then?" she asked. "I can do something. Something that might make them stop and take us back to Janus. But I'll need your permission first." She kept her expression fixed, her voice level. "What do you think you can do, Tom?" "I can destroy the ship. There's a robot, Nix Free Flyer, the one he sent out to look at the forward face of Janus." He had her full attention now, but she could not show it. Microphones probably wouldn't pick up their conversation above the noise of the ship, but the webcams would reveal the slightest hint of conspiracy. "You can control it?"
"Yes.
From here. I'm in contact with it all the time." "But Saul Regis locked you out of control," Bella said. "That's why you came to see me, to complain about not having enough to do. All you had were the virtuals."
"I did something about it," Crabtree said with an easy shrug. "Saul wasn't really very thorough. I found a way around his blocks. I've been doing it for days now, looking through robots, making them move. Not enough to be noticed, but enough to remember how it feels to do something."
Bella looked around, but Regis was in the next room. "But we're locked out of Shipnet."
"I don't need Shipnet. The only way they can lock me out would be with a skull saw, or a hammer to the head."
Crabtree had the glazed and absent look that told her he was only partly present in the room. Much of his sensory world was already focused on a point of view beyond the hull.
"Are you keeping up with us?"
"Yes.
I'm burning fuel pretty quickly, but I should be able to shadow Rockhopper for another 10 minutes.
"What can you do?"
"Nothing subtle," Crabtree said, closing his eyes tightly.
Bella called Svetlana to medical. "Engine down. Full reverse thrust on steering rockets, followed by a slew that must nearly have snapped the ship's spine."
"Take us back to the initial study position," Crabtree said. "Take us back to Janus."
By then they had no choice but to obey. At that point, the superior numbers of the other faction counted for nothing. They couldn't block Crabtree's link to the Free Flyer, because it bypassed Shipnet completely. Given hours, or days, Bella was sure that they could have found a way to lock him out, even if it consisted of nothing cleverer than disabling the antenna that was talking to the Free Flyer. But they didn't have hours, or even minutes. Crabtree had demonstrated his complete control of the Free Flyer by nearly ramming the ship, showing how easy it would have been to achieve a killing impact. He maintained a standoff for as long as the Free Flyer's fuel situation allowed. An hour passed, then another hour. By that time, even the most optimistic flight dynamic scenarios said that they had no hope of ever making it back home.
Gradually, even the most determined of Shrope's faction realized that the battle was lost. They were still the stronger party, and many of them probably toyed with taking out their revenge on Bella's entire faction, but on some level they must have known that there would come a time when the other party's services would prove useful. They could have taken Bella. She was of no practical use to them, had no skills that she alone possessed, but she was the captain, and something made them pass her by, as if to touch her would violate some unspoken taboo. So they took Tom Crabtree instead. They did it by stealth, when thoughts of revenge were beginning to recede. They waited for a moment when Crabtree was isolated, late in the ship's night, and grabbed him. It was done soundlessly, and no one was around to stop them. They took him deeper into the ship, then secured themselves behind airlock bulkheads. There were two men, Connor Herrick and John Chanticleer, both members of Parry's EVA squad. They had always struck Bella as dependable crewmen, proficient at what they did. She had never imagined that they might be capable of murder. They'd found an old spacesuit, an ancient Orlan 15, 40 years old if it was a day, hopelessly beyond repair, but kept aboard so that it could be cannibalized for spare parts. They inserted Tom Crabtree into it. They found a panel in the wall and wrenched it free. Behind the panel lay a gristle of colored flexible pipes, one of which carried superheated steam. Cams watched the proceedings. No matter where they were in the ship, everyone saw what was happening. Herrick and Chanticleer closed a valve and severed the pipe. They connected one end to the emergency air input on the old spacesuit, using gecko flex and duct tape to seal the bond. Crabtree, even then, could not quite grasp what they had in mind for him. Through the smeared faceplate of the old helmet, Bella thought she could see only puzzled curiosity on his face. Then they turned on the steam. Parry took some of his team to make a desperate attempt to stop the torture. No matter what else happened, that would always be to their credit. Eventually they broke through one of the sealed airlocks, but by then it was too late. Stoked up on adrenaline and steroids, the murderers came close to killing Parry as well. When Crabtree was dead, when he had finally stopped thrashing in agony, they recovered the Orlan 15. They took his obscene, roasted corpse to the nearest airlock and ejected him into space. But they kept back the suit. Now was not a time to start throwing things away.